Welcome to the Lighthouse Conversations. I'm Hashim Montasser, and today we're talking coffee. Orit Muhammad is the founder of the amazing Boone Coffee that we serve here at the Lighthouse. Her mission, which she embodies through Boone, is to source 100% Arabica coffee beans directly from Ethiopia, where she's from. Growing up around coffee, watching her grandparents and parents serve a cup to guests, going through an elaborate three-stage process, these are all part of Orit's formative memory of her hometown, and in a way, became part of her oral history. And here's something I didn't know. Traditionally in Ethiopia, coffee is served with popcorn.
That's our dessert in Ethiopia. We don't have a lot of sweets.
Is it salted popcorn? Or
salted popcorn.
Okay, regular popcorn.
Yeah, so it's even coffee wasn't drank with sugar until the 1960s, 70s. So everything was not a lot of sweets in our diet. So the popcorn and the first round, which is the abol, is given to the main guest, everybody in the older people who were here. So we would be the ones standing in line to pass the coffee, because as my mom or whoever made the coffee hands it to us, we would run and give it to the person. And once the person takes a sip, they say to'umbun, which means good coffee. So you always wait for the nod. So you could have from 5 to 20 people tasting the coffee. Then the second batch, same coffee, we just add water and let it boil again. So the second round comes in. And the last round is called baraka. So it's the
baraka from Arabic.
Yes. Even abol, I think, is from Arabic as awal. As you know, coffee first was traded by the Yemeni traders. So I think some of the words got the
stayed, name. Got retained.
Yes. So abol, I honestly think it means owl, but...
And what makes them think of it as baraka? So what brings that in, thinking of it as a blessing?
It's the last one. It's the same coffee ground you've used the third time. And this is just a blessing that it still can make some kind of coffee. So, and they bought it. And that is the lightest out of the three. And it's the one that is given to even the younger kids. So the younger kids in the room then gets to have...
Oh, so even the younger kids get to drink coffee.
That last one becomes the lightest. And usually that's how the coffee... So it's usually the most exciting time for everybody. So.
And does that ritual then continue throughout the day, or that's just a morning thing and then that's it?
No, I used to catch it on the afternoon thing.
Ah, okay. So because you were in school and you would come back
this
and you'd catch your mother with her friends.
Yes, usually this happens around 4 o'clock every day after Asr prayer. So every day. So this in our house happened at 4 because my mom was also a working mom. So when she came back, everybody would gather. To this day, now, it still happens. Usually if you stay-home moms or women of the house, do it in the morning too. So you could have one or twice, but almost every household, this is how they drink coffee.
And have Ethiopians that live abroad, like yourself, for example, in diaspora or... In other countries, do they retain those habits, or is it just when you go home?
We still have it the same way, but it takes a long time. Yes, it takes 45 to an hour just for the first round of coffee to come out. So it's not easy. So if you go to Ethiopia and you try to order coffee in the villages, especially now, it will take that long, and you can't rush it. There's nothing to rush.
Yeah. It's a whole ritual.
So it takes. It's also the form of entertainment. So, but when you have the smell of coffee, you'll have a lot of people coming in the neighborhood or people working in that area, and everybody gets coffee.
I mean, to my mind, that totally beats the 5 o'clock tea. I don't know. We might have some British listeners in the audience. I don't want to upset them, but to me, that's a lot cooler than 5 o'clock tea.
Yes,
you'll see. I'm going to adopt your ritual.
No, you'll see it, especially if you're driving in the villages, you'll see the smokes from the coffee, the roasting of the coffee, a lot of places.
That's brilliant. Okay, so you grew up clearly very much with coffee being visible part of your day-to-day life and your family's life. Then you went to the States.
Yes, so I studied, went to the States. I studied, obviously, African development, economics.
Again, we're going back to the UN.
I was going to work.
It all goes back to the UN.
Yes, it was going to be the UN. I was going to be a UN. I'm going to have a special diplomatic passport. That was the goal. Yes, so I... But, you know, working a lot of NGOs, especially when I graduated, I finished at Howard University. I did a master's in African development. It's just, things is not always as it seems.
There was a pivot there.
Yes.
You met someone.
No.
You didn't meet someone yet. Well, you're going to meet someone eventually. You're going to get to that.
Eventually, not then. Okay. The pivot didn't happen because of someone.
Fine. So you finished Howard University.
Yes. So, and I was working in a few of the NGOs, and it just seemed, you know, not exactly what I thought at the beginning. So the whole World Bank NGO, UN work. So I was trying to figure out what to do, but I was still, because my education led me to work in that kind of defense contract, that kind of field consulting, that I was working there, but I decided, you know, I'm going to have to give it a try. I'm going to need to go back to Ethiopia, move back, and try to figure out what I wanted to do, because I didn't know. I really didn't know at that time. But I knew I wanted to be in some kind of non-governmental agency. Not that my parents were happy about that, but I wanted to go back and start something. So, but I was actually climbing very fast in this consulting field. I decided to go back. That's when I met somebody.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, I know the ending of that story. That's why I was okay. So you met someone.
No, but I was moving back. I was moving back as soon as I had actually submitted my resignation. I was going to go back to Ethiopia and work maybe in not necessarily the big NGOs, but the smaller ones. So I was going to go back. So I moved to Ethiopia and I worked a year with the family in Ethiopia. And while I was, but then I got married. Yes.
Orit moved over to Dubai with her husband and her baby, and she was pregnant with her second baby at the time. As she began adjusting to her new life, the idea for her new venture already started taking shape.
I came from a family of working women. My mother was working. My grandmother was working. I always tell people, oh, it's amazing, you girls, all of you are working. I'm an African. As an African woman, you see women working. Do you ever see a picture of an African woman sleeping on the beach?
No, mostly the men are sleeping.
She has a baby on her back, a basket on her head, and things on her hands. Because this is how, in reality, in Ethiopia, in Harar, the part I was from, the women were the farmers, the coffee farmers, the pot coffee pickers. So for me, it's sitting at home wasn't something I aspired to or I wanted to do. Regardless of what I did, I knew I was going to be working. The thing changed. What in which area am I going to be working is the only question I had, because as soon as I had the babies, I mean, I was working until the last day, and I started thinking. But I realized, though, that the work I wanted to do was completely different than the work I have been planning all my life for.
So was the idea behind Boone then to do necessarily with coffee or wanting your own business or a combination of both, or wanting your own flexibility in terms of, you know, obviously when you own your own business, as stressful as it is, and, you know, I run my own business as well, so I know how stressful it is, but obviously you have some flexibility in terms of managing your time, or was it, oh, no, coffee, this is the passion, I want to do something around that. How did this idea form?
But you have to understand, I came here, I'm an Ethiopian girl at the end of the day. I am an Ethiopian. So the only Ethiopians in Dubai had such a negative connotation, because everybody only discussed, yeah, the perception was that all the Ethiopian young girls would look exactly like me were, you know, domestic helps. So I felt sad that there were no Ethiopians. Everywhere I kept getting mistaken for that. And it's not a big deal for me. Of course, it's just a job, you know. I know for a fact that the difference between a domestic helper here and me is, you know, opportunities. My grandfather had an opportunity to leave the village. Her grandfather probably didn't. Something like that. So I wanted something positive. Really, I wanted to do that. That whole Ethiopianness came back again. So because when I was in America, you know, when I was in college, university, it was just cool. It was nothing to think about. But here, I had to face the reality of, as an Ethiopian girl, what do I want to do? I wanted to do something that, you know, kind of puts a nice shine on Ethiopia.
So a big motivation was breaking the stereotype.
Completely. Because it would have been easier to send something to Ethiopia. A lot of the Ethiopians a lot of the Africans in this region usually make their money by exporting things from here. So I thought, why not bring? Yes. I really wanted, and I didn't think, I thought coffee, I knew coffee well because I've been drinking it all my life, yes, and I grew up, and our grandparents were coffee farmers, so I knew coffee well, and I have a lot of coffee connection. I have friends who own farms, family, so I said, why not coffee? But I didn't think it was going to be anything big. I thought it was going to be something small, but it would get me to talk about the positivity of Ethiopia.
So you started the business, we'll fast forward a little bit here, and it started as B2B, is that correct? So just to explain here to listeners, that means essentially you're supplying to establishments like restaurants and others. So for example, us as the Lighthouse, we are very fortunate to have your wonderful coffee. So that's how you started the business. People like ourselves, right? You would go to different restaurants and establishments.
Yeah, it took a long time. Yes, it took at least 2 years because I kept going to every restaurant. Every restaurant I see in the mall and anywhere, I would ask them. In the beginning, I didn't realize how the ordering happened because I would go to the hostess and ask her, do you want to buy the coffee? And of course, usually she would be like, no, we already have a coffee. Yes. So it took a long time to realize. But I didn't set out to do business with the B2B. I thought I would sell it to customers. So my website, my first website, was all about delivering home. But nobody knew I existed. So nobody was ordering, right? I didn't.
Yeah, know. It's a very different business. I mean, you have to directly connect with consumers.
Yes.
Versus connecting with restaurants that may obviously already have some kind of coffee supply.
Yeah.
It's just convincing them now that you are essentially, quote unquote, better than or more suitable for them than others.
Yes. So this is why it took a while for if you see my first writing, it's completely different from what I thought it was going to be. So the first time I was delivering all the coffees to just basically I was probably selling 20 kilos a month to my people I know. People.
20 kilos is how much I consume.
Yes, exactly. You know, so it's my friends, literally, yeah. Literally, so my neighbors and my friends.
Okay, and then what was the pitch? So you were coming to, again, this is the Lighthouse, and you're coming to Hashem, and you're like, well, you know, I own this coffee company called Boone. What was the pitch? Is it because it's Ethiopian? Is it because it's higher quality? Is it because it's organic? Is it because it's locally roasted? What's your pitch?
No, it was the first people who bought it was purely on taste. On taste.
Sure, I love that. Okay.
Yeah, so it wasn't, I did not even know the pitch, yes, because at that time, in Dubai, 7 years ago, when I finally started the business, people were not interested in, local food. They wanted the more European.
Everything had to be imported.
Yes. So when I used to say, oh, we roasted this and this is from Ethiopia, they kept telling me, do you have Italian coffee? Let me know when you have Italian coffee. So it was really weird because in the States, it's already started finding out where your food is coming from, the origin of coffee or the origin of any product was becoming in the front line. But here it's still a little slower. So everybody was still caught up in the European, the West, or the Australian, that kind of brands were the ones who were making it here.
When we come back, we talk about how Boone has also adopted a business-to-consumer known as B2C model, and the impact the so-called third wave coffee movement has on the farmers themselves. Hi guys, this is Hashem, and I wanted to share a little bit about The Lighthouse from where we're bringing you this podcast. The Lighthouse is a restaurant, concept store, and activation space all rolled into one at Dubai Design District. From time to time, we'll share more information about what's going on. We recently set up a retail pop-up space on the Palm in the newly opened Nakheel Mall. You can find some of the best-selling Lighthouse books and gifting items at Tipat Chica, the fabulous food hall at Nakheel Mall. And heads up, you can now order our food directly via Instagram, where you can collect a nice 20% off your first order. Just go to thelighthouse_AE and click on the link in our bio to find the option to order food online. Welcome back. I'm Hashem Montasser, and you're listening to The Lighthouse Conversations with our guest, Orit Mohammed. I'd moved to Dubai around 15 years ago and used to travel to the UK quite often for work. And I remember my mother taking an interest in my travels all of a sudden. Only later did she admit that her real interest was knowing when I would be in London to pick up some of her favorite French roast coffee beans. We didn't quite have that coffee culture in Dubai in those days when Boone initially started out. we were still deep in what is known as the second wave of coffee.
At that time, it wasn't a lot of, maybe there was two coffee roasters who were roasting here in Dubai. But other than that, everybody was just still stuck on the imported coffee.
But then you had the explosion of third wave, single origin, all of that.
Yeah, the third wave was happening.
Already, but abroad.
Already, yeah.
Where did it start?
The first wave, talking about third wave. So the first wave is that people were drinking instant coffee or any coffee just to wake up. You didn't care. Like, you know, your grandmother, she would make coffee from in a can or some, if it's in this part, she would make the Turkish or the Ibrik type of coffee. And then the second wave came in with when Starbucks, or I credit Starbucks, but it could be any, but the local cafes start offering more than just coffee, a cup of joe, as they say, but giving you like the cappuccinos.
Experience.
Yes, the cappuccinos, the macchiatos. And, you know, a lot has to do with the Italian. That kind of transformed to the rest of the world, where you could go somewhere and order a latte, which you couldn't before. Yeah, you had black coffee with milk or black coffee. That was your only options in a lot of part of the world, except maybe Italy. And that part, maybe in Europe, they had more options. So then the third wave came in when people are asking, where is the coffee from? Where is this coffee from? How is it growing? Which region? And now we have, which farm? Now people are asking.
Also, the U.S., you started having farm to table, exploded in the U.K., Australia, all of those places. People started wanting to know sources.
Yes.
Organic, source. Not organic, ethical,
exactly.
Not ethical, all of that.
Yes. In a way, it has helped the smaller countries of coffee producers, such as Ethiopia, even though Ethiopia is, I think, the fourth or the fifth largest exporter of coffee, because Ethiopian coffee is still done by small farmers. So it's not big conglomerates who own huge coffee farms, which means that for people who grow really good coffee, they'll get better price, because when people realize that they're buying coffee from this farm instead of the whole region, yeah? Before, nobody cared that there was coffee. They would mix all the coffees, the good, the bad. So now, now coffee became, you know, it's no longer just a commodity.
So with the explosion that happened, I think you're about to speak about this, in coffee and single origin coffee, and generally just obviously interest in coffee around the world exploded. Has that trickled down? Because obviously these companies are doing, or will be doing, very well, and they have profited enormously. But because you go back home and you talk to farmers and you obviously source from them, has there been a benefit to them in the way we expect it, or no?
Not the way we expect it, and not the way it should be. But it has, the coffee farmers are better off, per se, let's say, in just 20 years ago. However, not necessarily that much better off, because you'll see a lot of the coffee farmers are changing crops, especially in Ethiopia, because it's not it's a heritage. They've done it because grandparents did it, great-grandparents, but the newer generation, I don't think a lot of them will continue to do the coffee, because it's a labor-intensive work, and it doesn't pay much. It doesn't.
But isn't it interesting? I mean, so why are they not benefiting? Is it because those big companies are coming in and not giving them a fair price? Because you think with demand increasing globally so much, you know, people will be producing more and raising their prices. But it seems to me that the price raising is happening on the consumer side, but the growers and the farmers are not really getting a big chunk of that economics.
No, not at all. Because, you know, education has a lot. There are some agencies right now that are working, trying to elevate their, let's say, if somebody's doing a basic coffee, that to elevate it to a higher level. Because selling, the farmer does not sell to the roaster or to the end user.
Like, goes to the middleman.
There is a middleman. There's a couple of middlemen in the middle. Not a lot of people go to origin to buy coffee. So when you buy coffee, most coffee roasters, most in the world, buy from trading houses. These huge trading houses. And so the trading houses, they're trying to maximize their profits. So when they go and they buy, let's say, a region, they negotiate. Not necessarily
in bulk, and therefore they drive the price down. Do you go directly to, so where do you source from? What's your process?
Ethiopia is more complicated. There's three ways you could source coffee in Ethiopia. One is, you have to go through the exchange. They set up a system where at least there is a minimum met for the farmers. At least the price of New York is met. which is fine because that will give them the commodity price. But if you're a specialty coffee, that kind of loses your value because you're giving the basic minimum kind of thing. So you can buy it from the exchange. The second way is you can buy it from the unions and the co-ops, the unions and the co-ops. And the third way is you can buy it from farmers. But the farmers who are able to export until recently have been the bigger farmers. So they benefit because that means that a farmer who's able to export is usually who's a much more established, not the smaller farmer. So it's a tricky thing when you buy from farmers. So if you want to go buy it from the union, maybe the unions will have a lot of small farmers, but then you lose the quality because you cannot trace it directly to that specific farm. So I think they're trying to change the laws this last two years, but it hasn't necessarily, it's not as clear.
And as Boone, how many different beans do you sell?
We have about
eight varieties.
Because, you know, Ethiopia, people always say at the beginning, when I first especially started, why just Ethiopia expand? Why do you have only Ethiopia? Why not? I always said, why not Ethiopia? Ethiopia has over 5,000 types of coffee that has been classified. We're still the home of the country where there's a lot of wild coffee. There's a lot of every type of coffee you can think of, you can taste. There's somehow DNA is rooted back to the Ethiopian coffee. Somewhere left that part and has been planted somewhere else. Why not? So it didn't make sense, especially from Dubai, where Ethiopia is so close. You know, it's 3 hours, 3.5 hours away.
So you started in B2B, but then now you're coming back again to B2C and you're establishing your own coffee outlets. Right, that's very recent. So you're now in the Pachika in Nakheel Mall. You have an outlet there. You're also in Crate and Barrel, correct?
Yes. So this is the very scary. Running a cafe, it's not as easy as it seems. Yes, yes. More than anything, it requires time, and time is something I don't have because I have three children. You know, running the main roastery. So it's not, but it's fun. It's a lot of...
Did you do it because you feel you wanted to be closer to the customers, or do you do it because you think it's better business? I mean, give us just some sense.
You
have a great network of restaurants you sell to in Dubai today,
yeah,
and elsewhere.
It's literally just fell on my lap kind of thing. A friend called me and asked if I wanted to be there. And having a cafe is, you know, everybody's dream, right? Not necessarily mine. I never really actually wanted a cafe because I know how complicated... Because I work with a lot of cafes. I know how complicated it is. But... this came in an opportunity for us because everybody keeps asking us, where can we taste your coffee? Where do you have your brand?
At the Lighthouse.
I tell them. I really do tell them. And you match it well with all your food too. So, yes.
Thank you.
So we were saying, okay, let's have one trying to see. And both Crate and Barrel, because we work with MAF, we supply a lot of
Majid Al-Futtaim.
Yes, Majid Al-Futtaim. So they asked us. So the MAF one is almost a coffee espresso kiosk, right,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Like an express almost type of,
yes,
kiosk.
Yes.
But you have a proper one in the Pachika, in the Yonakil Mall on the park.
Yes. I'm glad you can pronounce it, the Pachika.
Well, it's my Japanese heritage now.
Oh, really? Yes, must be.
And how do you source? Because obviously, and we're very grateful to you for helping us with the training and all of that, but it's also complicated to find good baristas.
Yes, so...
How do you go about that?
No. Again, you know, it's just
trial and error.
Yeah, and we've had we lose even for the Dipachika place.
Not bad. Do you have Japanese heritage too? Must be the two of us. Well, look at the
DNA things. Yeah, the DNA test.
Yeah. I think both of us. I mean, I knew it. Makes sense.
It makes sense.
Explains all our good taste as well.
I agree, Dipachika. Okay, so the I had somebody resign the day it opened. So you know, working with people is very hard. So I you know, running the restaurant is much, much harder than I can't even imagine. I just sell coffee in that place, nothing else, and still complicated. Because one is that you have to be consistent all the time. So for me, usually when we're doing the roasting, we taste the coffee in the morning or I taste it in the afternoon, the new roast, the new batch that's coming in, we program it, we're set. But when you have somebody making a coffee every day, it depends on that barista's mood. How is he feeling? Did he calibrate the machine?
Very personal.
Yes, and And once, if the coffee is bad, the customer will not think it's the barista. They will say, oh, the bun is bad. Yes. So, you know, and I we do calibration for all the clients we have with customers. We make sure. And sometimes if I know if a barista is giving me a hard time, if it's not trained well or it's not into it or his mind is not there, that the coffee is not going to taste good. And we keep going back to the same. As soon as the barista is trained properly or changes, you'll see the difference. But people, because, you know, in the making of the coffee, when I took a couple of people to the coffee farm in Ethiopia to see how coffee was sourced in the Sidamo region. And I went with Yale from Baker & Spice. What she said is, I will never throw a cup of coffee away again.
I wasn't invited. I just want to say that. Maybe you missed.
The season is coming up. We go. Because if you see how many people work on that cup of coffee that nobody realized from the picking, you know, it's picked by hand. Each cherry is picked by hand. It's not machine picking. So, and then the sorting, there's so many level of sorting. And a lot of the time it's women bend back, you know, bend from their back. So by the time the barista gets it, so many people have touched the coffee and had tried to give you the best coffee cup. But that last person makes the biggest difference. So trying to keep it consistently good is the hardest part for the cafes.
Do you involve your children or your husband in any way in your business, or do you blend it, or is it sort of just like, I'm leaving, guys, see you later?
No, everything's blended.
It's blended, that makes sense.
I think you can't own a business and cut it off at certain times.
Yeah. So they see you doing this?
All the time.
And you take them with you?
Everywhere.
Okay.
And
what is their impression of their mom, you think? I mean, obviously that's your view.
Not very good, they don't do that.
Do you allow them to drink the light coffee or no?
No.
Oh, you don't?
You're breaking your own rules. Because we don't do it, the third one. Because I tell them they'll be short, you know. I don't want to risk it.
I feel like if they listen to this podcast, they're going to feel like shortchanged. Because you used to taste the coffee, but they don't get to taste
that. It was different times.
Okay. I like that. Fair enough.
The coffee, my husband, I think we finally found his passion. Through coffee, it's not the drinking of the coffee, it's design. So he's been. He wants to fix everything, design it. I swear. So I'm like, when did this happen?
Wow, it happened when you started the business. That's brilliant.
Because me, I'm not one of those design people.
You're not. So 1 to 10, what grade does he get in terms of his design? We won't quote you. We can always cut this out if this becomes problematic.
Yeah, it's going to become problematic because he thinks he's a 10.
And let's just say you think he's less than 10.
Yes. Okay. But you know, I really am not. We're completely opposite. I do not see anything, even colors. I think I might be colorblind or something.
But it's good to find out now.
See, I got nervous coming to design district. That's the only time I get nervous because everybody here is a designer, fashionistas. But listen, so he likes to do that part. When we're opening, he's there trying to give comments and getting things done, so which is really a relief. And license in this country, you have to have so many licenses. So those things he does, but I'm usually doing just the coffee part. Just this weekend when I was at the Nakheel Mall, I saw a family came in with their nanny, and she got so excited, the nanny, because she saw the coffee pot, the Ethiopian coffee pot, and she pointed to the family she was with. And they said, that's ours, that's ours. And I spoke to her, and she's like, look, that's ours. And I said, yeah, it's mine. She was so happy. So I said, let me give you, the Ethiopians drink a lot of macchiatos, small macchiatos. So I gave her. She was so happy. You know, it's really a joyous moment like this. Because now when when people ask me, you know, because now, you know, the business is doing well, alhamdulillah, and things are going well. But still, as a, you know, a woman of color.
As a woman, period.
I take every box there is to take.
You know, as a woman starting her own business.
Yes, a mother.
In a foreign country, mother of three, a woman of color. I mean, you pick practically all the boxes.
Every box. Yeah. A Muslim at that.
Yeah, here we go. At the Muslim part, great.
No, but seriously, But you know, you don't think of it, but I've spoken a couple of times in schools, and a lot of the young girls, and it's so weird how young girls are the ones who pay the most attention when I'm speaking.
And I'm not surprised. Young boys don't pay any attention.
Yeah, they really don't. I've seen them in classes.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you start business, I don't think anybody thinks that they're going to be a role model. But this, the fact, especially in the Middle East, to break that stereotype. Because when I first came from America, I really thought I was kind of exotic. Yeah, I thought exotic was a good word. So it was kind of because I was the Ethiopian girl. Ethiopia wasn't much known. But in the Middle East, where I see daily, and especially as a woman, you feel like when you're doing, because still people ask me when I'm somewhere coming in, oh, where is the owner? I still get that daily. So to say, no, this one, I'm the owner, unless I feel like they're going to talk too much. And I say, he's not coming. He's going to come later.
Oh, I mean, even we get that, you know, where people are like, you guys are, why are you here? I'm like, what do you mean, why are we here? This is our business. I mean, it's our livelihood. Of course we're here. So I think this is a new trend over the last maybe 5 years or so. I think it's a great trend.
It really is, because a lot of the people who did give me my first break, I must say, it was Kavanche and Chef Izu from La Serre. It was people who were facing the similarities of us. And they didn't choose me because they knew me. They chose the taste of the coffee, but they were able to give me the platform later on.
Yeah, and they could relate to the channel.
Yes, and almost everybody, like you and Hani, everybody is who's building their business here.
It's really mostly me. I mean, Hani has a very minor
part. It was Hani I actually met first.
Sit on the record. Well, you may have met him first, but let's just on the record say that it really is.
Like, it was him who chose.
It's really 95% me and 5%. I mean, let's just say that now. And
no, get but it, it really is, though, now and that I'm older, it's nice in a way when I see people people are motivated and they feel like, oh my God, you did it. This is going to be done. This can be done. And it really could be done. It took a long time. It took a lot of work. But, you know, almost as soon as I started, things start opening. Like even this new, the cafes are opportunities. Somebody said, are you interested in, because, and I always tell people, unless you start, you don't know. Because if you had asked me when I started 6-7 years ago, where do you think Boon Coffee is going to be? I would not even dream of this.
Thank you for listening to the Lighthouse Conversations. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and share the episode with your friends. You can listen to all our episodes for free in your favorite podcast player, and you can connect with us on Instagram @thelighthouse_AE. See you in 2 weeks.